Welcome to Theology on Tuesday. Go ahead and grab a seat. If you wouldn't mind, we're going to get started. My name is Justin. I'm glad that you're here. We've got some spaces on the steps if y'all wouldn't mind scooting up a little bit. Plenty of places up front as usual. If this is your first time, welcome. We're delighted that you're here. My name is Justin Hare. This is Brian McGreevy. You're at Theology on Tuesday, and I just got louder. All right.
That's good.
Yeah. You'll see these little sheets hanging around the room. The way the evening works is Brian and I are going to talk about a certain topic, and then the second half of our time, you can text in any question whatsoever the entire night. So this top QR code is your way to do that. And I believe Alexandra is the one who's going to be she's going to be moderating the questions this evening. So if you submit any question you want, it could be related or unrelated to the topic that we're talking about tonight, she will do her best to present those. But if you see questions you like in there, go ahead and give them a thumbs up, and that will help have the really good questions come to the top, all right? So that's one of the first things. A way to stay in touch with us and see all the opportunities that we'll do Theology on Tap, usually every other Tuesday, but like this last time, we had an extra week off, so we sent out an email. And if you want to join our email list, you can do that on the bottom left corner there and scan that QR code, join our email list. There are a few other announcements I want to draw your attention to. A group meets outside of Theology on Tuesdays. It's a lot of folks who are here, but Alexandra and Meredith. So I don't think I saw Meredith, but Alexandra's here tonight. She's our moderator. They help run and coordinate the Holy City Life Group. It's a fellowship time for folks, young adults who are looking to get to know other people. And it's a great opportunity outside of this Theology on Tuesday time. You can join that group me by scanning that QR code that you see there. Two other things. Brian, I'd love for you to speak about Choral Evensong. I have that down here as one. I think the next one is December 8th. But can you just explain? I know we have a lot of people not from the Anglican tradition here probably tonight. So what is Choral Evensong and why should people even consider that?
Yeah, so Choral Evensong is a really amazing worship experience that is drawn from ancient liturgies, and it involves chant and music. It's about an hour long, and it is like walking into a different world when you go to Choral Evensong. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand if you're stressed or anxious ever. But if you walk into Choral Evensong, all of that will just slide away because it captures you with the beauty of things of the kingdom of God. And it's a service that's built around the whole idea of the incarnation, about Jesus becoming man and coming to save us. It's a beautiful service, and we do it, I think, particularly well at St. Philip's Chris as our organist choir master, and the choral music is just beautiful. There's no sermon. It's a great time to just sort of come and sit and let this just wash over you. And there's usually a reception at the end. It's a great way to either end your week or start your week on those times that we have. But it's always the second Sunday at 4 p.m. So we'd love to see you there. Yeah.
It's at St. Philip's Church where we both are. We have, this year, first time, we have folks from all sorts of traditions, people who don't go to church at all who come, and we're delighted that you're here. But I will say, having done Choral Evensong a handful of times, I was a little suspicious at first because it wasn't exactly my cup of tea, is what I thought. And it really did jolt you out of your normal experience, and I can totally attest to what you said. A lot of this, even as the one leading it, I was mm-hmm. my stress and anxiety left, which is not normally happen, but it's a great opportunity. It's the second, as you said, second Sunday at 4 p.m. December 8th is the next one, and
by candlelight,
exactly. And as I mentioned, we do Theology on Tuesday every other Tuesday for the most part. We've been doing this now for three and a half years.
That's
which
crazy.
Is hard to believe. We thought it would just be me and you and two other people and yep. Henry's, but it's been yep. a great opportunity. And the way we're going to draw 2024 to a close was a number of you mentioned, have we ever considered doing a worship night for Theology on Tuesdays? And we have. In fact, we are. So we're going to talk about Advent tonight, but we're going to do an Advent worship night for Theology on Tap. And that'll be December 17th. That's on the very bottom right of this sheet here, has some of the details. And so we're really excited about doing that in the evening on the 17th. It'll be Tuesday, which we normally meet for theology on Tuesdays. But we're just going to do a worship night. And I think it's going to be really, really special. So mark your calendars for that. Invite some friends. We'd love to pack it out. We'll talk a little bit about why we're doing that tonight. But let's go ahead and begin at the beginning. So tonight we're going to talk about what is Advent. Advent is starting up. You know, I'm actually really excited about this year because you may not know this. December 1st actually begins Advent, I think, this year. Most people think December begins Advent all the time. But that's actually not the case.
Right.
If you have like those little Advent calendars, there's all sorts. I'm going to be curious, what's the most creative Advent calendar you found?
There's a bourbon Advent calendar.
Yeah, I've seen a wine Advent calendar as well.
Yeah.
All sorts of crazy things.
I thought the bourbon would look kind of cool.
Bourbon one looks, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed if anybody wanted to give me a bourbon Advent calendar. But most of those always start on December 1st. But Advent always begins the fourth Sunday before Christmas. Mm-hmm. It's got four Sundays before Christmas. It spans that time. So it's a season in the church year leading up to Christmas. We're going to talk about what that is, why it's important, and what it can actually do for you and for me in our lives to draw us closer to God if we lean into it. So why don't you tell us what Advent means, first of all? That might be a foreign word, but where does that come from? What actually is Advent?
Yes. So Advent comes from two Latin words that mean to come. And the idea is that Jesus is coming, and so we are preparing for that. And traditionally, Advent has been a season of longing, looking toward Christmas, and this idea of preparing yourself for the joy of Christmas and preparing yourself for the incredible fact that God chose to take on flesh and enter into our world to save us. And part of the reason that I think Advent is so important, especially in our culture now, is that we have lost our sense of wonder, most of us. We are so used to things just sort of happening, and we're sort of used to Christmas, and we're used to the commercialization of Christmas, and the Christmas stuff starts showing up at Halloween, and
before that, even
all all of those kinds of things, and we kind of, in some ways, are just sort of over it. But the whole point of Advent is to reawaken wonder, to reawaken longing, and as a result of that longing toward Christmas, that when Christmas comes, you actually experience the fullness of joy of it because you've been preparing for it.
Yeah. It's definitely one of those countercultural seasons, as you alluded to, because I think people are ready to get to Christmas. Advent is almost synonymous with Christmas for many people. As it's the Christmas season, you've got Christmas trees and all that stuff, and I don't know about where you stand on that. I think it's okay to have Christmas trees in Advent. But the point is, okay, maybe not.
No, it's fine.
Like,
I'm just messing
like
with
the
you.
Season of Lent, which is the season leading up to Easter, it's one of these things that's really out of step with the world around us, the season of Advent, because it forces us to, as we await the coming of Jesus, both on Christmas, but one of the interesting things, so we have to wait, first of all, and not just jump to Christmas. So there's a really important way Advent is out of step, is we don't just immediately jump to the thing that we like, but we wait to this day of Christmas when we remember that God became flesh in the person of Jesus Christ. But it also is not just the coming that happened in Bethlehem that Advent is about. If you look at some of the readings that are assigned that the church has read throughout the centuries, a lot of it has to do on the second coming of Jesus. Why might that be?
Well, I think that the obviously with the word Advent, to come, it means not only that Jesus came as a baby and was born to grow into the man who would die on the cross to save us, but it's also a reminder of God's faithfulness that Jesus will come back at the end of the age to make all things new, with the new heaven and the new earth and all of that, and that we long for that in the same way that we live in what theologians call the now but not yet, where Jesus has come, but there's still sin, there's still evil, there's still terrible things that happen. But when Jesus comes again, all of those things will be finished. And I love the text in Revelation where it talks about his coming again, where it talks about that God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There'll be no more pain, no more suffering, no more sin. And so that, obviously, is something to look forward to as well.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, a little baby in a manger can be domesticated, I think. That has been in many ways with the wider culture. But when you think of what the fact that Jesus' first coming and his second coming, Advent holds those together in perfect harmony, actually. And the whole point of his first coming was actually to rid the world of sin, which he will do at his second coming, without ridding sinful people from it. And I think that's his first coming was all about substituting himself so that sinful people like you and me could actually endure and make a way through the final judgment when he returns again. So the first coming, the second coming of Christ, those are held in tension, yes, but also in harmony when we consider the season of Advent. So what are some of the things that you particularly like about the season of Advent?
Well, one of the things I love about the season of Advent is that it is a season of reflection. It's a season of taking a step back, of being intentional about trying to slow down and take time for things like silence. Silence is not something that most of us have in our lives, hardly ever. And so Advent is designed to create a space to be able to reflect, to be able to think about God's love, to think about God's sovereignty, to be able to reflect on the wonder of the fact that God chose to become flesh and dwell among us. So I love that. I love the music of Advent. One of the things that's sad to me in our culture is that we immediately go to Christmas carols after Halloween. It's like you switch from Monster Mash to Hark the Herald like overnight. But Advent, there's this whole body of music, a lot of which is written in minor keys, very haunting music that is reflecting on how hard it is to live in a dark world. But then when you live in a dark world and you can see that there's the possibility that light is coming, that there's hope in that, there's a deep beauty in that longing toward that. And I think we shortchange ourselves when we jump straight to Christmas because we forget about the pain and sorrow of the world and of this life that, you know, that all of us experience, but that Jesus has fully entered into that, and that when he comes and when we celebrate that coming at Christmas, there is a great joy because of that.
I think about, so you mentioned this a few weeks ago in a homily, but the Barbie movie and the really that scene where basically she's, you know, they're in Barbie land, and it's, do you ever think about death? And, like, the record player goes, and never mind, let's just keep going forward.
And everybody on the entire screen freezes, and they're all like, ugh.
Right. Yeah. And Advent, in a sense, along with Lent, but being able to face the darkness. Like, we've talked about waiting and longing because we're awaiting the return of Jesus, and part of that is we look around at the world around us and see, it's not as it should be. It's still broken in many ways. And Advent is a season that actually invites us to name some of that, both in our lives and in the world around us. And I think back to that scene where it's so disjointed from the world around us, where nobody wants to actually admit some of these things that are deeply wrong. Yeah. But the church and the season of Advent in particular have always been invitations that have offered invitations to consider the way things are broken and the way the world is not as it should be, and to do that with hope, actually. And so light and darkness is another one of those themes. And what I love about the season of Advent is that it invites us to consider the darkness around us and to consider that the light has come into the world and that the darkness hasn't overcome mm-hmm. it and it will not overcome
yeah.
it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's one of the great symbols of Advent is the light, and particularly the light of a candle and the darkness. And Justin and I were just looking today at a service in England that is very common in England. It's an ancient service. Many of us here know lessons and carol services of Christmas carols, but in the English tradition, there also is a tradition of the Advent carol service. And what that service does is people gather in these ancient cathedrals and they turn off every light that is in there. And someone will come out and sing one of the great ancient chants of Advent, maybe one of the O antiphons that we'll talk about in a minute. And then as some of the scriptures are read prophesying about Jesus, candles will be lit one after another, and eventually the whole place, everyone's sitting in the darkness, but there are all of these candles all around. And I think that that whole imagery is so appropriate in walking through Advent, and the idea of a light and the darkness is very much that whole idea of Jesus being that light. And as Justin said, quoting out of the prologue of St. John's Gospel, that the darkness has not overcome that light, and that light shines in the darkness, and there's joy in that.
So we both have a particular affection for Advent hymns and Advent songs in particular. What would be the difference, would you say, if I think for a lot of people, what exactly is the difference between an Advent song and a Christmas song? How would you say, no, that's what was the Christmas song that you just referred to a minute ago? Hark the Herald, is
yes,
that right?
Okay. Yes.
So what distinguishes an Advent song from a Christmas song?
Well, one of the things is the way they sound. Almost all of the Advent songs are written in minor key, which makes you have this sort of haunting feel. Not all of them, but most of them are, whereas Hark the Herald is often in F major, which is the same key that you find a lot of marches in. It's very sort of upbeat, rah-rah kind of thing. Whereas the Advent hymns are slower. A lot of them derive from plain chant, so they don't have the same kind of rhythm. It's more of a flow than it is a rhythm. And I think that many of those songs are songs that reflect on different aspects of the longing that we have for things to be made right. And one of the most classic of those is O Come, O Come, Emmanuel. And that is one that derives from what we were just talking about, the O antiphons. I don't know, has anybody in here ever heard of Boethius? Okay.
All right. Yeah.
Better one than none.
This is going to be fun.
So Boethius wrote a book called The Consolation of Philosophy, that if you lived in the ancient world, after the Bible, that was the most popular book in the world. And no one knows about it now, but that book was written in the 6th century, and that book actually quotes some of the O antiphons. And an antiphon is something that's part of a worship service that is often chanted back and forth from side to side. And so these are really ancient chants in the church that go back at least to the 500s and maybe before that. And O Come, O Come, Emmanuel takes those O antiphons, and they're called the O antiphons because each of the verses starts with O something. And the hymn, O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, lines them all up, and they're designed to talk about different aspects of who Jesus is. And there is wonder and grace and longing in all of that.
Yeah, in the simplest way, a lot of them have the word come in it, right? Which is like Advent is exactly what it means. They're longing for the coming, on the one hand, either of the, if you're putting yourself prior to the birth of Jesus back before, in BC times, you're looking, as O Come, O Come, Emmanuel says, praying for the birth of God in the Son, Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. My favorite Advent hymn is the Come Thou Long Expected Jesus. Have y'all heard of these two songs, hymns? Yeah, okay, great. And that one's much shorter, mm-hmm. but it has that same sort of theme of longing and waiting and desperation for Jesus to come to us. And I think we often think of that particularly in the manger, but I think there's a way, I love what Karl Barth said, that the church always lives kind of in the season of Advent. As you said, mm-hmm. in the now and the not yet. Mm-hmm. Like Jesus has come, but he's coming again. And so the church has always been in this time where we are looking forward to Jesus coming to us to redeem, or not to redeem, he's already redeemed the world, but to make the world right, to consummate what he's actually won on the cross and the resurrection, to fully rid the world of the pain and the sorrow and the evil that we experience. And so that's why there's hope, I think, even in the midst of the longing. But how many places can you go today that can balance those two things so well? The full experience of just the heinousness of evil and suffering that each of us know firsthand, but can also do that in a way and not just kind of offer a pat on the back, but say it will be made right, and longing for the day that it actually will be perfectly restored.
Yeah, and I think part of what is so beautiful about Advent that is really expressed in that hymn, O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, Emmanuel literally means God with us. And so that whole idea of the loneliness and brokenness of this world, that God doesn't sit somewhere far off and say, oh, there, I hope it will be better. He comes in and sits with you in that world. And that's what Advent and Christmas are all about. And there's just a deep beauty and wondrous mystery in that.
So what are some practical ways ways to live into this season of Advent? What are some practices that might be helpful for us to actually kind of lean into this season that would help our lives trying to get closer to God?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there's so many things. I think one of the most important is to set aside some time, ideally each day, but if not each day, each week, to be able to just be still and to contemplate. I'm a big believer in using a candle in Advent during that time because it's such a great symbol. And I brought my special candle tonight, which not only looks great, but it is a scented candle, and I'm not always a big scented candle fan because a lot of them smell like cleaning supplies. But this one is designed to smell like Christmas trees. And so it brings that longing toward Christmas with it. But I think to be able to have a place where you go and sit and where you read scripture or you are silent, one of the things that I think is really useful during Advent is to pray the Advent collects. A collect is a fancy word for a prayer that's designed to be used for a group of people. And Thomas Cranmer, who was a great Anglican.
I brought all four collects.
Justin, are we the same person?
Pretty close. Pretty close. I literally wrote them out.
That's so beautiful. Thank you for that. So one of the things about these collects is they're written in the 1500s by Thomas Cranmer, but they are absolutely beautiful and profound. And if you take them one week at a time and just say those out loud, it will change your life. So I think that's a great practice. I also think using an Advent devotional can be very helpful. I am a big fan of, yes, this one, O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, which is great. And this also, it's beautiful, which I really appreciate. But another one that you can do that's not a book that you can just go and look at online, I have a really dear friend named Betsy Cahill, who is a brilliant, deeply Christian woman who happens to live here in Charleston, but she does a series of Advent devotionals that people all around the world follow, and each of them has a scripture reading and a reflection and a piece of music that's an Advent piece of music, and there's often a work of art in them as well. It'll take about 10 minutes to do them, but they will really cause you to stop and to reflect, and I find them to be really, really helpful. You can find them if you go to BetsyCahill.com. You can sign up and they'll come to your email every day.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, the spiritual.
So why did you put those four colors?
Well, I was going to read one of them because it's amazing. I can't see it, but I got to.
Are you going to do the cast away the works of darkness?
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing. Just listen to this prayer, all right? So this is the prayer on the first Sunday of Advent, the collect, right? Which is collecting our thoughts as we seek to pray. It says, Almighty God, give us grace to cast away the works of darkness. There's that darkness theme. And put on the armor of light. Now in the time of this mortal life in which your Son, Jesus Christ, came to visit us in great humility, that in the last day, when he shall come again in his glorious majesty to judge both the living and the dead, we may rise to the life immortal through him who lives and reigns with you in the Holy Spirit, one God, now and forever. Amen. I think about that prayer, like if you just prayed that every day during the season of Advent, like that's so rich in many ways, but all four of them. I mean, there's the Holy Scriptures, read, mark, or inwardly digest these writings that have been inspired by God. There's John the Baptist about the prophets. He's a major figure we haven't talked about in Advent, but the collect are a great place to start. But really all of the spiritual disciplines, when you think about it, Advent is a great season to lean into that. You mentioned silence, prayer. I would say also fasting. That's another one that's really, really important, because one of the things fasting does is you're not just, you know, trying to get rid of something that's bad. Like, you should always be trying to do that. But fasting is giving up something that's good so that you experience and can kind of commiserate with the ache and the longing that typifies the world around us. So when we deprive ourselves of something good, we experience the lack and the emptiness that, in many ways, people who are suffering are experiencing. And we cry out to God on behalf of that. So Advent is a wonderful time to lean into fast. And actually, I find myself looking at this. There are a number of spiritual disciplines that I thought about. But the TechWise family, which may not sound like an Advent devotional, but actually has a number of things in there that tie into what would be helpful, I think, during the season of Advent. One is maybe a technology fast during the season of Advent, to either put social media aside or some other form of technology, to leave it out of your bedroom, to do something other than being tied to it. But also, in a moment, I'll talk about singing, which I think is a major part of it. But what else would you say would be helpful in the season of Advent?
One of the other things that I think is helpful to do, and I think this has to do with what I was saying right at the beginning about how wonder has been squished out of most of our lives, to read some things that will fire your sense of wonder and fire your sense of hope. I'm a big believer in reading things like the Chronicles of Narnia, especially The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is really great for Advent, because if you know that story, you know that one of the things that is often repeated is that in Narnia, it is always winter, but never Christmas. And there's this longing toward Christmas, but there's this hope in it. And you see that in The Lord of the Rings. You see it in the stories of George MacDonald, like The Golden Key, which is a wonderful short story. But reading things that are not the Gospels, that talk about joy breaking out into a dark world, that can be a great way to help rekindle your sense of wonder if that has gone cold. Another thing, and this is a little out of the box, but if you are sitting around thinking, gosh, I'm so tired of watching The Bachelorette or whatever it is that you might be watching on TV, if you go on YouTube and you put in the search bar Advent Carol Service College, you will get all of these kits from all of the colleges at Cambridge and Oxford in the UK that have been having Advent Carol services since probably about 1200. And you can listen to a world-class choir. Many of these have the bulletin where you can pull it up and look at the words of what's being sung. And it's just a great way to enter into the stream, which is another thing I love about these collects, is you can think about people, Christians, praying these for the past 500 years, and that when you enter into those words, you are joining into that company and wading into that stream, which is one that is profound.
Yeah, that's good. I think about singing, right? And not just singing individually, but singing together. If you think today, where are the times where you're actually singing with other people? It's one of those things that 50, 70 years ago, something like that, there was a lot more common places around the world where people sung together. Mm-hmm. Now it's really odd. People kind of sway back and forth. You might go to a concert and hear somebody singing and you're kind of there in the audience, but you can't hear the people around you singing. But singing is both, I love this quote, it talks about singing, this was from Andy Crouch and his TechWise family, where he talks about how singing may be the one human activity where that most perfectly combines the heart, mind, soul, and strength. You think about the, and that's why Advent, I love, there are these rich songs and hymns mm-hmm. that have been written that engage our mind, but the very act of singing, where you're filling up your lungs and belting it out, there's a reason why Augustine said, when you sing, you pray twice. Okay. And I think during the season of Advent, it's particularly appropriate, as you're longing, as you're waiting for the coming of the Lord to make all things right, to sing to Him. And there's so many rich songs that have been penned by Christians down through the centuries that can help give voice to the season that we find ourselves in. Mm-hmm. But being able to do that with other people, and this is why I really would love to have like as many people as we can on December 17th when we gather and we sing together and have a worship night for Advent, to be able to sing some of these great hymns. But you're encouraged when you hear your brothers and sisters around you.
Yes.
Singing that as well, if you can get over maybe the fear and the awkwardness of like, maybe you don't sound that great, but boy, we live in a day that just consumes music as opposed to creating it. But if we can join our voices and encourage one another through song, it is a powerful antidote to our loneliness and also to our despair and cynicism, I think.
Yeah, and one of the things that's going to be great when we do that worship night is that it will be dark outside, but we will have all these candles, and it will, even as you walk towards St. Philip's, you'll be able to see that, and yeah, we're both really excited about that.
Totally. Anything that you'd say kind of in closing about Advent?
I would just say, if this is all new to you, if you never had even heard of Advent before, don't feel bad about that, but I would really encourage you to try some of these things. I really believe that it will deeply enrich your understanding, not only of who Jesus is, but it will be a real blessing to you as you move toward Christmas and celebrating that, to have done this work on the front end to prepare.
Yeah, I think anytime you anticipate something and lean into that, it always makes the arrival of it that much better. And there's a sense we get that when Christmas comes, but ultimately we will be reunited. That's the faith that we have,
is right.
That Jesus
yeah.
will return. So we have a bunch of resources up here. They'll be up here at the end, but I'd love to see, Alexander, how are we doing on questions?
And one of the things we do have up here is we have printed out all of the verses of O Come, O Come, Emmanuel. If you want to just take one of those to reflect on.
Take it with you, take it home. Yeah, incorporate that into your daily schedule.
Okay. This first one you guys kind of answered already, but what are some practical steps I can take to align my life with the seasons of Advent and Christmas?
Yeah, I think that's it's a really good question. So I think setting some time aside, and I would say setting time aside in a particular place. What I do is I have somewhere that I go in my house, and I have a little candle there, and I have my devotional guide right there, and I can go and light the candle, and I do it in the morning. And I find that to be really helpful to do that. This is probably really obvious, but going to church during Advent and worshiping with the body of Christ during that season. If you are part of a tradition that doesn't really do Advent, you can visit somewhere else for a little while, and you might find that to be a blessing. Not that you need to change churches by any stretch of the imagination, but just
take a field trip.
Enter into a different stream for a little bit. That can be very enriching. I think any of these things that you do with someone else, it just makes it that much better. If you're doing a devotional, maybe get somebody else to do that same devotional and then share your thoughts about it. Those can be really helpful.
Yeah, one of the things we didn't mention, and you know, I've got three little kids at home, so we do this every year, but it's great. I did it in college even, but the Advent wreath, have you heard of Advent wreaths before? So like, there's a number of ways you can do that. We're actually making one on December 1st. If you want to come that morning, there'll be materials there to make your own little wreath that just sits on the table. If you have a roommate or somebody who'd be interested in doing it, it's a great way to do it in community, to have a physical, tangible thing where there's four candles and it builds as you get to the central fifth candle is the Christmas Day candle. And so it's this little thing that just kind of helps kind of orient your life, and usually it's visible. Another way to do it is, I mean, I think we're both okay with Christmas trees, but maybe not with Christmas songs, I guess, during Advent, I don't know. But if you have a Christmas tree, maybe consider not decorating it all the way. If you are able to do that, and you can kind of lean into the season of anticipation by whether it's a Christmas tree or an Advent wreath or whatever it is, making your home as you get closer to Christmas more and more full is a way to lean into this season too, I think. So those are some ways we didn't mention.
How can we encourage others to celebrate the real meaning of Christmas?
That is a terrific question. I think one of the best ways that we can encourage that is to share about how meaningful we are finding our Advent preparation to be, to share about what we're excited about for Christmas for ourselves. Depending on who it is and who you're surrounded with, you know, doing things like spending some time with friends talking about memories of Christmas and what mattered to you. Another thing that can be a great resource for talking about the real meaning of Christmas is Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. In Charleston, one of the great things you can do if you have some money to spend is go to the Charleston stage production of A Christmas Carol, which is laden with not only the story, but the hymns of Christmas. But I think trying to invite people into your journey a little bit is a great way to be able to do that.
I think the best way not to do it is by shaming whoever you're with. You just spill your wine.
You don't think that's effective?
Just, you know, I don't think that's generally helpful by pointing out how wrong people are. But usually by leading...
Just because Grandma got run over by the reindeer is their favorite Christmas carol.
Yeah, just, yeah. Try saying, you pagan, that's terrible. That's probably not going to go over super well if you're trying to, you know, share the real meaning of Christmas. I think there's certainly the, like, experience of love and family, which is a major part of it. But your faith, I mean, Christmas is about God coming into the world in the person of Jesus. And so focusing on that starts individually. But if you have other people that are Christians as well, you can invite to do some sort of practice or even just having conversation about that's the best way. So, and I think people will, like, if you're leaning into the season in the right way or at all, people are going to see that that's different. That, and I think that's one of the things about Advent. It really does stand out as opposed to a lot of what you'll see out there in the world today. So
yeah.
I would say just by trying to do it yourself and have it be authentic and invite people into that, but doing it in a way that's not super judgy and kind is a good way.
What is your advice on not getting sad during the holidays?
I
want to go and say this because I think it's actually okay to be sad during the holidays. Obviously, the holidays can be a really hard time if you've lost family or friends. Like, particularly recently, you're reminded of all the things that you once had but no longer have, and that can be a really challenging thing. And that's exactly why we're talking about Advent in some ways, is Advent gives us the permission, as we look at all the ways that this world is broken, to name that and to live into it, and to actually do that in a way that has hope, right? And to think towards the fact that God knows what it's like to experience sorrow. That's what Jesus came. He experienced a life of hardship and pain and sorrow, and he died betrayed by his friends, and yet he conquered death and sin. He lived the perfect life. And so part of the holidays is setting your mind on that. And on the one hand, that gives permission to feel some of those things, which is important, but to do it in a way that actually isn't in utter despair, and to look forward to the things that he has given you. You're able to experience and express gratitude for the things that he has given you now, but also to look forward that he cares enough about your current condition that he's done something about it, and he will do it ultimately when he returns.
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. And I think part of the answer to the question turns a little bit about why you're feeling sad. I think that if you're feeling sad because there are people or other things that you are missing, to be able to take some time to reflect and to give thanks for the memories that you do have of times that we're happy with those people, that can be important. The other thing I would say is to not withdraw. I think that totally withdrawing can be unhelpful. I also think that journaling can be really helpful, just sort of writing out what you're feeling and why you're feeling it, and just offering all of that up to God can be a really cathartic thing to do.
And I'd say this, we've said this before, but the Psalms are a great place to go. Maybe the Psalms to me are like a little microcosm of the season of Advent, because they're filled with both lament and sorrow, but also they end usually with a tinge of hope. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's all sorts of emotions that you'll find in the Psalms, but going there and reading them and praying them yourself will usually give voice to a lot of the pain and the sorrow that we're experiencing. So I would say, in addition to journaling, maybe going to the Psalms would be a good place to go during the holidays.
Do you have a resource you can recommend for finding or listening to Advent songs?
Chris?
There are definitely a lot of great Advent songs. There are some wonderful things that you can find on YouTube. I think even if you just put into the search bar Advent hymns or something like that, you will probably get some pretty good stuff from there. Almost all of the major choirs at Oxford and Cambridge have these Advent carol services that have wonderful music. St. Andrew's Cathedral in Sydney is another place that you may find some good stuff on YouTube. But I haven't checked out the Spotify Advent playlist to see what's on there, but
surely there's got to be.
That might be good. The piano guys have some good stuff with Advent that's worth listening to. So,
is that the, I don't know who those are. Is that the Skit guys?
No.
No, okay. The piano guys. Those are different people.
Yes.
I was looking at the ones that I particularly like during the season. We talked about O Come Emmanuel, Come Thou Long Expected Jesus. What's quickly becoming one of my favorites is Lo, He Comes with Clouds Descending. That's just an amazing one. Comfort, comfort ye my people, sleepers awake, hark a thrilling voice is sounding.
Creator of the stars at night.
Yeah. Those are all choral, like hymns. So you may not, if you typed in like Advent songs, they may, like Charlie Brown might come up or something like that. I don't know. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so is there any non-choral music? I know there's some what is it, Indelible Grace, who's done some work in taking old hymns and making them more contemporary with more, like guitar and stuff like that. And there's some great versions of those hymns, but saying Advent hymns might be more helpful because those are particularly the rich, getting at the meaning of Advent, usually hymns as opposed to just songs.
Yeah.
But does anybody happen to know the answer to that question? Maybe, Chris, do you have anything to add to that?
I can say that going back to the point about Spotify playlists is that we have one for tonight, which is actually pretty great, and I have a couple more that I'm willing to share links.
Yeah. So we do have a playlist. We've never actually like sent that out. That'd be kind of good. Does anybody know?
I think tonight's is specifically great.
Yeah. So we have a playlist every week. One of the things you may have picked up on is that it ties in with the theme. And so tonight's theme of Advent, that's the playlist behind it. But I'd be curious about finding some songs that are not just choral hymns, but other sorts of songs that are good that refer and contain Advent themes.
I'd be willing to put together something that's not just fluffy choirs singing choral music. It's modern context stuff, and be happy to share that.
All right, thanks, Chris. Let's do that.
Best devotional for women.
We're a little challenged.
Speaking as a man,
I will say that my wife, who is a woman, she is a big fan of Amy Orr Ewing's recent book that's called Mary's Voice, which is an Advent devotional that is particularly oriented toward women. So I would say that certainly would be a candidate. I think Betsy Cahill's certainly worked very well for women as well as for men.
Is this question Advent devotionals for women?
Oh, I don't know.
Or was it just devotionals for women?
Just devotionals for women.
Okay, sorry.
That's what I didn't know. That doesn't make it any easier for me to answer, actually, so I don't know why I asked. But those were both great ones. The only thing that I would say is don't... I'd say this to men, too, is... I'm okay with just a regular devotional.
Right.
I think sometimes
it focuses you in on the scripture.
Sometimes it can make you lean more into who we are as people as opposed to who God is. And I think the most important thing you can do is leaning into who God is and what He's done. Yes, there's some perhaps good devotionals that are specifically geared towards men or women, but you know, I would push back on slightly the, you know, men don't care about emotions and women more care about the nice fluffy stuff. I think that's totally bogus. I think that you could be a good devotional is going to speak equally to both men and women. But the person who asked that question is probably going to disagree with me. That's okay.
With the Advent candles in church service, are they required to be specific colors? I have seen them in pink and purple and all blue.
Ooh. Okay. Well, yes. There's a whole...
It's like three people who care about this answer.
There. But traditionally, the idea is that the candles in the Advent wreath, the color of them symbolizes something. And so the idea, traditionally, most Advent wreaths that you will see have purple candles. And part of that is because there is an association with the idea of penitence, but there also is an association with the idea of royalty, with purple. Both of those same things are somewhat true with blue. Often the pink candle is the Gaudete candle, which is the rejoice candle that is the right before you're coming to Christmas where Mary is rejoicing, so there's a particular focus on Mary and that. But I would say, basically, it doesn't really matter what color they are.
Yeah, just different way. And the blue was a different tradition in Christianity that, similar to the purple, it just made it a little bit different than the season of Lent.
Right.
The point is that it's just marking it out specifically as the certain day.
So yeah.
Not terribly important.
So this is a bit of a departure from what we're talking about, but how should we feel as Christians about Nancy Mace being upset about biological males trying to use the women's room in Congress?
There's a lot in there, Brian. Where do you want to start with that one?
I would say, first of all, that we are, I don't want to go so far as to say we are apolitical, but we are mostly apolitical. I think that there are many issues that are caught up in that question. I don't want to really get into a pro or against Nancy Mace kind of thing. I do think that one of the things taking several steps back from all of this, and not even getting to the bathroom issue, is that as Christians, one of the things that we believe that is taught in the scriptures is that God created everyone in his image, and that everyone is created with dignity and worth and beauty in the eyes of God, and that God created people male and female, and that there is a givenness in that. And what our culture chooses to do with that, and what the political world chooses to do with that, may or may not line up with what Scripture says. But Scripture is very clear that there is a givenness to that.
Yeah, I don't know what Nancy Mace said. I don't really.
Yeah, me neither.
So I'm not going to speak into that, but I can speak into the ethical side of that question, because the Bible does have a lot to say about the ethics of it. And I like what you said. One of the things that we live in a day where it's just taken for granted that it's up to you and to me to construct our own identity as to who we really are. And if you press into that a little bit, that's actually that's terrible news. Like, trying to construct who you are, on the surface it sounds great, like pretty much every Disney movie kind of has like a ring of that a little bit. You can be whoever you want to be.
Recent Disney movies.
True, yeah. But the reality, I think the Bible has much better news to offer than that narrative that you can just kind of create yourself, whatever you feel on the inside is who you truly are, and so you have to figure out who that is and express that. I don't think that's really good news for anybody. And I think that's why there's so much depression, anxiety around it. But when you realize that who we are, there's a givenness to it by God, that God has said, regardless of how you feel on the inside or whoever you are, he has made you in his image.
He's made that you is good.
Male and female. Yeah. And there's an objectivity to that. And it's good, and there's equal worth, right? Like, and to live into that actually provides the path to freedom. And so I think that gets at, I think the heart of the question that was just posed is that living into the identity that God gives us, which is comes from the outside, we don't have to make it up on the inside, there's a lot of freedom in not having to do that ourselves. And it's something that's received, and because it's given to us, we can't lose that, as right. opposed to the fickleness of our feelings and the fickleness of how we try to come up with who we are today. I just would push back on that a lot. So,
a Christian family member advised that I should avoid celebrating Halloween, saying it does not glorify God. Thoughts on this?
Here we have that.
Yes. So there's so much that could be said about that. I think that there is a mistaken impression that some people have that everything about Halloween is a plot of Satanists. I would say that is not accurate. The origins of Halloween, it comes from All Hallows Eve, which is an ancient feast day in the church. And so part of the whole idea of All Hallows Eve is you're looking at two Christian feasts, All Souls Day and All Saints Day. And the purpose of All Saints Day is to give thanks for those who have gone before us and who lived lives of faith and obedience to God. All Souls Day and this whole sort of thing of All Hallows Eve, part of the idea was to mock death originally. And so the idea of mocking death is because Christ has overcome that, and Christ has overcome Satan. I think it all depends on what is meant by celebrating Halloween. I can't remember exactly how that was phrased. If you're leaning completely into the macabre and demonic aspects of it, obviously that is a problem. But if you have a six-year-old dressed up like a ghost who's trick-or-treating, I don't think that's really very threatening.
Yeah, I think you gotta figure out where are we on the spectrum of evil and gruesomeness that's on there. I think that's part of it. Also the motivation, you know, on the one hand you'll have folks who are like, because it has some tie to paganism, which there are all sorts of things out there that have that, then you should reject it altogether. Others say you should totally imbibe it, just go all in, that's fine. I think there's another way that's more in the middle of where you can redeem even these pagan holidays that have, or some tie to pagan holidays. As you mentioned, it's not fully pagan. It's tied to All Saints Day in many ways. So I think that's the posture that I'd feel comfortable with, is what ways can I as a Christian accept and live into and positively look at the ways my faith as a Christian transforms and redeems this holiday? And then what are some things that I can't get on board with? And that'll help inform how you actually go about doing that day.
Yeah.
Maybe one more quickly, so we don't end on Halloween.
What's the name of the song with Maranatha?
Maranatha? Maybe it's Maranatha.
There are a lot of songs that have Maranatha in them. Not quite sure which one that might be.
Chris, twice now. Any idea?
The list is quite long, my friend.
Yeah, there's a lot there. All right, one more.
During this time with the election, how can we as Christians practically and continue to love our neighbor even if they have differing political opinions?
That's a good one.
That is a great question. I think that one of the things that we have lost in our culture, very sadly, is the ability to understand that every person is created in the image of God, and that we can love people regardless of what their opinions are politically. And so I think that part of the answer to that is that love is an action and a choice. And so if we choose to have the posture of love toward people, that will go a long way. And I think the other thing is to resist, and this is one of those things where being old, I guess, gives me a different perspective. But when I was growing up, there was very much an understanding that prejudice meant that you looked at a whole group of people without knowing them as individuals and made assumptions about them. And I think that used to be looked down on as something that was really wrong. But I think that's exactly what people do now. They don't call it prejudice, but anyone that voted a different way from how I voted, or people that are associated with that candidate or that candidate, they're all like this. And I think that is not something that anyone who's Christian can embrace.
Yeah, it's identity politics. I think that's one of the things, the biggest thing I can think of, and this is going to be, in many ways, maybe this is overstating it, but the future of our nation, which I think is a good thing that we should long for, that it would actually not just be terrible, but how can we, since if you're an American, have a vested interest in that? It's not our ultimate home, but it is where we find ourselves, and there's plenty of injunctions in the Bible about honoring those in authority over us in the governing lands that we're in. Identity politics is toxic. It's terrible. Focus on what you have in common. Mm-hmm. And the more that your generation, the generations that are coming up now, can actually find commonalities and shared values and a shared vision of what our nation can be in a positive way, and leaning into what we have in common and longing for that. There's a sense of patriotism. I didn't C.S. Lewis talk about that in a positive way. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that can be recovered regardless of what party you voted for. We have to be able to recover that in the sense of our earthly existence here. But as Christians, we have the further resources of recognizing that while that's important, it's not the ultimate thing in life.
Yep.
That we have an eternal home that's awaiting us, but that nevertheless enables us to live here and now for the common good. And I think just learning to care deeply about what we do have in common, even with people who are radically different from us, they're still human beings and they still live in the same place. And until we can figure out how to live together well, it may be pretty bleak in the short term. So that would be my advice, I guess. So, well, y'all, thanks for coming out. We'll have the materials up here on Advent. We'll be back in 2 weeks this time, for real, not 3 weeks like last time. And this is a lot of fun. Thanks for coming out. We'll be around to continue the conversation.
Thanks for coming.